Welcome to a special podcast edition of the Pastoral Resources Program of the Eastern American Diocese, sponsored by the Fund for Assistance to ROCOR. My name is Michael Kazmierczak. Today we speak with Father Peter Jackson, rector of St. Theodore Church in Williamsville, New York. Father Peter has just returned from a trip to Guatemala. We'll speak on the topics of missionary work, the Pan-Orthodox Seminary being built in Guatemala, and what we as ROCOR can do to help.
My name is Father Peter Jackson. I'm the pastor at St. Theodore Russian Orthodox Church in Williamsville, which is a suburb of Buffalo, New York.
Father Peter, what initially drew you to evangelize the natives of South America?
Oh, well, it's a long story. My wife grew up, we were both originally evangelicals, and my wife grew up in a missionary family, a Protestant missionary family. Her family moved to Colombia, South America when she was 5 years old, so she grew up in Colombia. My story basically is that growing up as an evangelical, when I was about 13 years old, I felt God calling me to be a Bible translator. And so when I was in college, I studied linguistics, and then I joined a Protestant mission called Wycliffe Bible Translators, which is one of the largest missions in the world. And well, after I had joined Wycliffe Bible Translators and was taking their classes and teaching their classes, I met my future wife. We got married and resigned from the mission to work with her family. That became my mission, and we basically joined the family business. And so returned with her to Colombia, South America, where we were working with an Indian tribe called the Kogi tribe of northern Colombia. A very interesting tribe. I encourage everyone to look them up on the internet. They're a fascinating tribe. We worked with them for 10 years, and my main task was to translate the New Testament into their language.
How did you come to find out about the Orthodox faith?
Well, that's a really good question, another very long story. While we were working in Colombia with this Indian tribe, and while I was engaged in the task of Bible translation, you have to work directly from the original languages. So I was working from the original Greek to translate the New Testament. And when you read the New Testament in Greek, it sounds very different from when you read it in a language it's been translated into, whether it's English or Russian or whatever. The Greek just has its own flavor to it, and the words have certain connotations that they might not have in other languages. Eventually, I started reading early church fathers, like the Apostolic Fathers, St. John Chrysostom, St. Athanasius. And when you read them, the voice that they speak in, the language they speak, and I'm not just talking in terms of Greek, I'm talking in terms of their worldview, there's a direct connection with the New Testament, especially as it's read and understood in Greek. And when you read later church fathers, or Western church fathers, rather, starting from St. Augustine, moving on into Western Europe in the Middle Ages, you just find a whole divergence. So eventually, studying church history, I understood why there was this divergence. It's called the Great Schism. And that basically the Eastern Church, as it were, the Orthodox Church, remained faithful to its New Testament roots. My wife and I had always wondered why there were so many thousands of Christian sects and denominations. This is a question that I always asked my parents when I was a kid. This is a question I found out she always asked her parents when she was a kid, and neither of us got a satisfactory answer. But when we discovered that the Orthodox Church is the original church and that it still exists, for us it was just a no-brainer. For us it was very easy to come to the Orthodox faith because it was what we'd always been looking for. It rang true for us in terms of its antiquity, its authenticity, and especially for its mystical theology and its spirituality, which is just completely absent in any kind of Western Christianity.
Father, is your interest in Guatemala a resurgence of zeal in missionizing South America, or has it stayed with you during your tenure at St. Theodore?
Yeah, my wife and I definitely feel called to go to Guatemala and serve there as Orthodox missionaries. We just got back 36 hours ago from a two-week stay there, and it's not a new thing. I'd say it's definitely a continuation of our work in Colombia 15 years ago or more. We've been here in Buffalo for 15 years. We've been Orthodox for, 18 years now. And this whole time, well, originally when we became Orthodox, we were in Colombia. We were baptized down there, And then our intention was to stay there and start an Orthodox mission there. For various reasons, that didn't work out. We came back to the U.S., studied at Holy Trinity Seminary in Jordanville, and I was ordained, and then I was assigned to this parish here in Buffalo. And when we came, we told everyone, we made it very clear, their intention was just to stay in Buffalo for a year and then return to Columbia. Well, that didn't work out. Now, 15 years later, here we are. So it's always been our intention to go back to Latin America in some capacity or other. My two main concerns have been, A, being involved in some sort of Spanish language seminary for training clergy in Latin America, which is a great need. There's been a great void in that area, because right now, if there are clergy candidates in Latin America that are sent back to Greece in some cases, or they come up to Jordanville, and oftentimes they don't go back to Latin America afterwards. But also, it's silly to expect them to have to go overseas, learn another language. It's a great expense and sacrifice to them. It's just very infeasible. So there's a great need for a seminary in Latin America. So I've always been praying about that, praying for something to open up. I've been contemplating just starting one online myself. Even that's a huge task. But our other concern, B, is for the people themselves, and particularly the indigenous peoples in Latin America. We worked with indigenous peoples in Colombia and translated the New Testament for them, but I'm still very concerned to see them come to the Orthodox faith. Many of them have come to be evangelical Christians, and now we feel we've got to finish the job and get them into Orthodoxy. Not them, but other indigenous peoples in Latin America as well, and in the broader picture, all of the Latin American peoles.
You and Matush Castellana recently traveled to Guatemala to assist with the newly illumined Maya Indians. Would you mind giving us a little history about how these people came to the Holy Orthodox Church?
Yeah. What's really interesting is there's actually two groups that in recent years in Guatemala have been seeking Orthodoxy. And I want to clarify that first, because it's often a source of confusion. There's a group that approached our synod of bishops of the Russian Orthodox Church abroad just a couple of years ago and asked to be received. There was some dialogue with them, and it ended up coming to naught, unfortunately. And the last I've heard, they've been involved with a Monophysite church, the Syrian church, with an archbishop in Los Angeles. So that group, unfortunately, that didn't bear any fruit as far as coming to Orthodoxy. At the same time, there's another very large group in Guatemala that was received by the Greek metropolis of Mexico and Central America just in 2010. So these are two completely different groups, both very large, of hundreds of thousands of people, and both in Guatemala. So it's understandable there be some confusion between the two groups. So the group that we're talking about and that we plan to work with and just visited is this group that was received by the Greek metropolis in 2010. The numbers I've seen online vary anywhere from some sources say 100,000 to 200,000 people. Some say over 500,000 people. When I went down there and spoke to the folks directly there, the numbers I got were anywhere between 50,000 and 200,000. So I'd say those are conservative figures, and they always are quick to add that there's more people coming to them all the time. And when I say more people coming to them, it's not people coming to them one by one. It's entire parishes and sometimes entire towns are coming into the Orthodox faith all at once. So it's a huge work. I keep saying it's the biggest thing since sliced bread. As far as I know, and I'm more than happy for someone to correct me just because I'm ignorant, but it seems to me it's the largest mass conversion to Orthodoxy since the baptism of Russia 1,000 years ago. It's just a huge event. And to me, the most amazing thing about it is that so few people know that it's even happening. It's hundreds of thousands of people that are all embracing Orthodoxy at once. So it's just a huge effort. The church only has 8 priests to date. One priest we met is in charge of overseeing 120 parishes all by himself. He's not a bishop. He's a priest. And there's no other priest in his area. He has to take care of 120 parishes. Imagine. How many parishes are on our Eastern Diocese? It's huge. So, and these priests themselves are very capable. They're very mature men, but they just aren't very educated in terms of Orthodoxy. They're very eager to learn. Anything we share with them, they're excited to hear about, but they just don't know. These people came to Orthodoxy because they were disenchanted with the Roman Catholic Church in Guatemala. They felt abandoned. They tell me that there'll be some town with some huge cathedral in it, and a Roman Catholic priest will come to serve there once a year. And so they're quite disappointed with the Roman Catholic Church. They feel abandoned by them. And so they've just left in droves, and they came to Orthodoxy, not really understanding what Orthodoxy is. They didn't really come to Orthodoxy for positive reasons, but really for more of the negative reasons, for what because they're against the Roman Catholic Church. And the last thing they want to do is join some Protestant sect. They want to join something that's authentic, ancient, Catholic in the proper sense of the word. And so they came to Orthodoxy just because it's not Roman Catholic. But I don't know if they understand the implications of that and just how different Orthodoxy is from Roman Catholicism. So there's a big learning curve, not just with the laity, but even with the clergy as well. But our experience has been, and other people have told us who are down there, that anything that they're taught, anything that's explained to them, they readily embrace.
Father, how did you become involved in these missionary efforts, and what was your role?
Well, again, you know, our initial interest in Guatemala started several years ago with this other group that approached our Synod of Bishops of the Russian Church abroad. And so we started getting interested in Guatemala at that time. And through that effort, we found out about this other group that had been received by the Greeks. So when the dialogue with this first group didn't come to fruition, by that time we'd already known that this group existed and that it had been received by the Greeks. How we got involved with them, it wasn't easy, because even though we knew they existed, it was hard to find very much information on the internet, hard to find who to contact. Eventually, through the Orthodox Christian Mission Center, which is the official Orthodox agency for the hierarchical assembly in North America, we contacted them and got in touch with a Greek Orthodox priest from the U.S. who's now the main missionary down in Guatemala, Father John Chekos. Even then, it's kind of a strange course of events, because I would email Father John and his emails wouldn't get to him, either because of just technical difficulties trying to send an email to a remote region of Guatemala, or whether the emails just didn't get into his email file. I don't know. But it took months before we finally reached him through a third party. And so it wasn't easy. But finally contacted Father John, and he invited us to come down. We were originally to go down after Pascha this year, but it turned out that wasn't good timing for him. So just very rapidly in late February, we decided that was a good time to go down. Father John Chekos agreed. And so we flew down February 26th, and we just got back the day before yesterday on March 12th. So we spent a full 2 weeks there. And when we went there, we didn't know what to expect, but we were hoping several things. We were hoping to meet some of the clergy there. We were hoping to attend a liturgy at one of their parishes. We were hoping to meet some folks that speak some of the indigenous languages. And we were hoping to meet Mother Inez, who is probably the most internationally known figure in the Orthodox community in Guatemala. She has a monastery. She's under the Antiochian church. She's not in the Greek church, but she runs a monastery and an orphanage. And so a lot of people are familiar with Mother Inez's orphanage, and there's lots of trips made down there, and lots of Americans, especially clergy, have adopted children from her orphanage. So we're hoping to be able to meet her too. Well, we were able to accomplish all these things, and often in quite miraculous and providential ways. Some of the people we wanted to meet when we first went down there, people said, oh, you're not going to be able to meet them. They're out of the country right now. You're not going to see them. And all of a sudden they would just show up. We'd cross paths and we were able to meet them. And we didn't think we'd be able to meet Mother Inez, but again, providentially, someone was able to give us a ride because they were going that way. And things just worked out. Things worked out in an amazing way. The last day we were there, the night before we were supposed to fly back, just a few days ago, we were with Mother Inez, just to give an example of the way things were just providential and working out and coming together. We learned tragically that the Secretary General of the Russian Consulate in Guatemala City passed away. He just had a heart attack and just died very unexpectedly. And right while we were there at Mother Inez's monastery, and she told us this, and she said the really sad thing was that the priest that serves there at her monastery is out of the country, and he wasn't around to be able to serve a panihida. And so I said, well, I can serve a panihida, you know, before we leave town. And she said, wonderful. So she contacted the consulate staff, and they arranged to have a panihida at 9 in the morning. Of course, our flight was just a few hours later. So we rushed from the monastery straight to a funeral home. The place was full of all the consulate staff. Served a panihida, finished up, rushed off to the airport, and flew back to the U.S. But it was just very providential. Providential we were there. Providential we were able to serve that way. Providential we were able to help out in that situation and to meet the consulate staff, which in the future might be very helpful for us. But it's just one example of how, without even looking for it or intending to, God worked things out so we were able to meet the right people and be in the right places at the right times. One more thing I wanted to mention, because I've already mentioned in passing, we want to go into more detail about it, is about the languages there. The seminary that we're starting up, that the mission is starting up, and it's going to be under the Guatemalan Church, is going to be a Spanish language seminary. But the bulk of the people who are in the church in Guatemala are Maya Indians, the vast majority of them. I'd say 95% of the folks that have converted to Orthodoxy in the last few years are Maya Indians. The ones that speak Spanish speak it as a second language. All the Mayan Indians speak a Mayan language as their first language, and many of them don't speak much, if any, Spanish. In Guatemala, there are 22 different Mayan languages that are mutually unintelligible. People often make the mistake of referring to them as dialects, but dialect is a very specific linguistic term. You can talk about American English dialect and British English dialect, meaning they're different varieties of English, but they're mutually intelligible. The Mayan languages are not dialects of each other. They're full-fledged languages that are mutually unintelligible. So if someone speaks, for example, the Mam language, M-A-M, which is a Mayan language, their neighboring language, the Kekchi tribe, speaks a Kekchi language, and they can't understand each other. So these are not minor differences. These are full-fledged languages. And I was hoping while I was there to meet some of the speakers of these languages with an eventual goal of translating texts into these languages, because these people, the services, when they have services, are in Spanish, but the people, like I said, many of them don't understand any Spanish, or if they do it, they understand it as a second language. So there's a great need to translate the Divine Liturgy and other services into these indigenous languages, morning and evening prayers, catechetical texts. There's no shortage of things to be needed to be translated into these languages. So my experience working with the Kogi language in Colombia helps toward that end. So I feel like this is the right thing at the right time, to the need for starting a seminary, teaching the seminary, preparing their clergy, which is such an urgent and huge need, and also with working in these indigenous languages and translating very needed liturgical and other texts into those languages. So those are the two areas that I'll be working in. There won't be any shortage of work.
So what are your impressions of the situation in Orthodox Guatemala? Where do you see the Guatemalan mission going?
Well, it's worse than we imagined. We expected, you know, you hear there's hundreds of thousands of people that have converted to Orthodoxy, and you assume that means that they've converted to Orthodoxy, but they've been received into the Orthodox Church. But as I said, their understanding of Orthodoxy is quite lacking. Their mentality is still very Roman Catholic. They want to be separate from Rome. They don't want to be under the Roman Catholic hierarchy. So they basically, their intention is to be independent Roman Catholics, and that's how they understand Orthodoxy to be. They don't understand that Orthodoxy has its own history, its own theology, its own practices. So the things that we experience down there that we see an urgent need to reform are, for example, they don't serve Holy Communion to infants. They still have the practice of First Communion. They don't seem to understand that that's not an Orthodox practice. That's not a part of Orthodox understanding of the liturgical life. They still expect their children to have a First Communion when they're around 7 years old. Also, you go into the churches, and fortunately, a lot of beautiful Orthodox icons have been put into these churches. So you have icons there, but you also have Roman Catholic imagery. So you have, in an average parish, you'll see statues of Christ, statues of the Mother of God. And you look to one side of the church on one wall, and there's an image of the Virgin of Guadalupe. And you turn and look at the opposite wall, and there's another image of the Virgin of Guadalupe, because, you know, one is never enough. And the priests, you know, they'll move some of these things aside. to make way and set up things for divine liturgy. And then after the liturgy, the old ladies will move everything back where it was. So these are the kinds of things we were witnessing. There's just needs to be a whole change in their mentality. Not to mention calendar issues. I'm not even talking about old calendar. I'm just talking about Orthodox calendar. For example, they think they're in Great Lent right now because that's when the Roman Catholics observe Great Lent. And of course, Orthodox Great Lent doesn't start yet. And they observe Easter on Roman Catholic Easter. They don't even seem to be aware that there's an Orthodox Easter and Orthodox calendar. And I spoke with one of the priests about this. I said, are you people at least aware that Orthodox celebrate Easter on a different date? And he said, oh, Father, you have to understand the culture here. The culture here is so Western, and all their neighbors and friends and relatives observe Easter on the Roman Catholic calendar. And I said, well, how do you think it is in the United States? We have the same issue in the United States, you know? So there's a lot of work to do, to put it mildly. Not to mention the fact that since there's only 8 priests for 330-some-odd parishes, there's a lot of lay ministers, which has its good sides and its bad sides. It's good because these people are very educated in the scriptures. They're very experienced leaders, but they're lay leaders. They can't, you know, perform the sacraments, but they have the practice of, they're still using Roman Catholic hosts, you know, the little wafers in most of their parishes. In parishes where they have priests, they're baking prosfora and serving divine liturgy and using a paten and a chalice properly. But that's in very few parishes, because in the parishes where they don't have priests, I found out to my horror that the priests are blessing boxes of hosts and distributing them off to the parishes, and lay people are distributing these hosts, and the people are understanding that this is Holy Communion. It is not. So this is something that desperately needs to be changed. And the way to change it is to educate the current clergy and to educate seminarians who will be future clergy. Machik and I were commenting to each other on the way back that all these things that we experienced and saw that just horrified us, our reaction was never, you know, oh, this is just, you know, terrible. These people are very confused. How can we be involved with this? Our response rather was always, oh my goodness, we need to be here. We need to help straighten out this situation.
Father Peter, what could the average Orthodox person do to help?
Well, Lord willing, Mashka and I, we're currently applying to the Orthodox Christian Mission Center, and Lord willing, we'll be accepted, get the necessary Episcopal blessings from our hierarch here in the Russian Church Abroad, Metropolitan Hilarion, as well as the local hierarch there, Metropolitan Athenagoras of the Greek Archdiocese in Mexico and Central America. So we'll need those blessings. We'll need to be accepted by the Orthodox Christian Mission Center. It's a whole application and interview process. And then the next hurdle is to raise financial support. So if you want to help us, when the time comes, we would appreciate everyone's financial support. I don't like asking for money. I never have. It's a thing that as a Protestant missionary was the part about being a missionary that I didn't like, having to be what someone referred to as being a holy beggar, going around with cap in hand. But the reality is, if we're going to live overseas and do missionary work, we have to have people back here in the States and other places giving us pledged regular support. If you're interested in doing that, please contact us. Even though we're not in the mission yet, you can at least contact us so we can get the ball rolling about that. Also, for the mission in general, there's great needs for things like chalice sets. Again, they've got hundreds and hundreds of parishes, well over 300 parishes, and very few chalice sets, not nearly enough to go around. There's a need for vestments, a need for blessing crosses, a need for all the accoutrements that an Orthodox parish needs. The trouble is always getting the things down there once they're donated. There's a lot of icons that have been donated that are sitting in the U.S. because it's just so hard to ship them. It's very costly, and so they basically are trying to find people to be willing to take them down with them when they fly down to Guatemala to visit and such. But all these things are needed, and so if anyone, you know, if any parish has a spare chalice set lying around, especially, please let us know, and because those things are very needed down there.
Father, thank you for finding the time to sit down and speak with us. Before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Once we're down there as missionaries, we'd love for people to come down and visit, to help. We need everyone's prayers. We need everyone to understand that this is a pan-Orthodox effort. This has been stressed to us over and over again as we visited down there. The people are really eager, if not desperate, for missionaries to come down and help out the situation because it's just such a vast, vast effort. Even if there were 5,000 people, it would be just a tremendous effort to help these parishes get their feet on the ground, to educate them, to catechize them, to train clergy. But it isn't 5,000. It isn't 50,000. It's as many as 500,000. And the number is just so overwhelming that when I say that number to people, people just look at me like a deer in the headlights. Their eyes just glaze over. And even though you say the word 500,000 people, they look at you as if it's 50, you know, and they'll say, oh, we already have mission work, you know, in Haiti or in Indonesia. Okay, well, Indonesia, you know, that's beautiful. There's beautiful mission work that's been going on there. Lots of resources have been invested into the mission in Indonesia, and that's 2,000 people, which is great. And every one of those 2,000 souls matters. We've got hundreds of people in Haiti, and that's wonderful. It's a beautiful thing. It's a miracle of God. And each one of those souls matters. But we're talking about hundreds or thousands. But in Guatemala, we're talking about hundreds of thousands. It rivals the numbers of Orthodox faithful even in the United States. It's just such a huge, huge number. I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it just can't be stressed enough how much help is needed there. Not so much in terms of sending money down there, although, again, I hate to say this, but we do need, you know, financial support personally for myself and Mach to live there. But what the church really needs is prayer, awareness, and a willingness for people to help out in ways that directly benefit the people in terms of catechism, education, seminary training. So if people want to help get the seminary on the ground, they're currently building housing for seminarians there. They're digging a well so that the seminary can have its own well water. But the seminary is getting up and going, and sometime this year, Lord willing, will open. And Lord willing, by the end of 2013, Machik and I will be able to move down there permanently. For right now, my wife and I are the only ones who are going to be down there full-time as missionaries and full-time working at the seminary. So we really ask for everyone's prayers and support for this effort, and do pray for the Guatemalan Orthodox Church. I also want to thank the Fund for Assistance for providing the funds for the Pastoral Resources Program with these videos and now with these podcasts. And Lord willing, maybe you guys can come down and make a film. I know you've made a film recently about Orthodoxy in Dixie. Maybe come even further south. Come to Guatemala and film us down there.
I would like to thank Father Peter Jackson for taking the time out to speak with us. This has been a special podcast edition of the Pastoral Resources Program of the Eastern American Diocese, sponsored by the Fund for Assistance to ROCOR. For more news, videos, and podcasts, please visit our website at eadiocese.org. For the Media Office of the Eastern American Diocese, I'm Michael Kazmierczak.